Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. Today, we've got a very special guest, an expert and an innovator in the world of psychology, a founder aiming to make psychology accessible for everyone, and someone that we're really excited to speak to. It's the founder of Synergy Therapy, Dr. Lisa Lovelace. Lisa, how are you?
Hello, hello. I'm good. Thanks for having me. Good to
Oh,
be
no,
here.
thank you so much for joining us. So, we always start off these podcasts in exactly the same way. So, who are you and what problem do you solve?
All right. Well, who am I? I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I'm a psychologist. Can I start that way?
Of course, you can.
I'm a psychologist and I'm a business owner. I own Synergy eTherapy, which is a 100% telemental health online group practice. I started this long time ago before online therapy was really known. And then, of course, with the rise of COVID, everybody's online. And now telehealth is here to stay. Thank goodness for that. And the problem I aim to solve is to increase access to mental health care. That's the main goal. Before telehealth was really a known modality of administering, mental health care, you had to figure out where's the nearest therapist to you. And it's not always close. It's not always accessible for one reason or another. Maybe it's the drive. Maybe you have kids at home. You have work. Maybe you just don't want to go into an office. And so there's a lot of people out there that aren't getting the health care they deserve. So this is really the main problem I'm trying to solve. And now a lot more clinics and therapists and doctors are able to provide online treatment, which is wonderful. So hopefully more people are getting the care they deserve.
And how was the, with it being accessible and obviously by the time of it turbocharged a bit by COVID and people not being able to go out and have those physical sessions, what's the post-COVID need been like for therapy and particularly telephone therapy?
Yeah, so we do, video and telephone. What's the need like? I think it has become more of like a household name, telehealth. And to be honest with you, we could use more therapists. There's a lot of people that now know that it's accessible, and I think the need is there. It's just grown. It's easier than ever to just go online and find a clinic like Synergy eTherapy or some other type of technology hub and basically get a therapist in your back pocket. And that's wonderful for many reasons. So the need is there. We need probably more people going into school for therapy, counseling, psychology, and to continue to grow and provide access to people who need it.
Totally agree with you. I feel like at some point in life, everybody should have a therapist or experience a therapist just to check in with themselves and find out who they are and maybe unpack some of those beliefs that we've carried with us since we were children. One of the big things that I think will probably come up in sales and comes up in therapy, it's a word that rings true with prospects, so salespeople ring in prospects if we're trying to sell someone, but also the same word comes up with salespeople and kind of their own journey, and that word is motivation. So people often struggle with making significant changes in their life. So what are some of the common barriers to change, and how can therapy help individuals overcome them?
Honestly, that's probably one of the biggest questions that clients have if they were to sit down and think about it, is like, why can't I do this? I know this is healthy for me. I know this is better for me. Why can't I just stop yelling at my kids? Why can't I, stop smoking? Why can't I get out of bed and not cry today? Like, I should be able to will myself to do these things. Because I know cognitively that it's better for me, that it's healthier for other people and for myself. There's many stages to change, right? Change is not easy. You'll go to the gym in January and it'll be packed, and then by March you can have your pick of any elliptical machine there is, because after a few months it drops. The motivation goes really high and it peaks, and then it kind of drops off. And it's typical for most human beings. That's kind of how we're built. We have like a built-up pressure. Maybe it's internal pressures, maybe it's external. If you don't do this, then this will happen. That's more external. Like, You know, if I don't stop drinking, my wife is going to leave me. If I can't get out of bed, my kids aren't going to be on time, right? There's some of these external pressures. How are other people viewing me? My grades in college, or whatever the case might be. And then there's those internal pressures that we have on ourselves. And sometimes it's those voices from our parents or guardians or people who helped raise us of like, what are those internal dialogues that we tell ourselves? And sometimes they're great of like, we can do this. And then sometimes they're like, you can't do this. You're not worthy. Those kinds of messages that kind of become ingrained in our thought process. So motivation, people think is like, I should just be able to do this if I know what to do. And it's not that simple. There's, you know, this biopsychosocial model to who we are. So we have our biology, we have our psychology of just who we are as an actual person. We have our DNA, we have what's learned behaviors, right, with the people that helped raise us. And it all comes together in this nice pot. And like from 0 to 6 are those primitive years of developing our brain, our personality, who we are. And let's face it, like how many people have experienced traumas, like significant traumas, whether it's death or loss of somebody you love, or whether it's abuse or neglect, or growing up in a family with a parent or guardian that's, you know, substance abuse or their own mental health issues. So all of these things come into play, create like you as a human being and who you are. So sometimes we have to process out these things that keep us stuck. And so it's, I think, from the way that I work at least, it's a cognitive behavioral aspect of like, are my thoughts, what are my feelings, what are my behaviors, right? And then it's also, what are these stuck traumas that I'm just continuing to cycle? I'm not even aware of it. So we have to really get at both, kind of the stuff that you don't know that's underneath how your body functions and physiologically, right? And then also just kind of your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors of where you are now. So it's really a holistic, you know, approach to motivation. It's just not one thing all the time of like, I know it, so I'm going to do it. I wish it were that easy. I think we'd all be a little bit, you know, kinder to ourselves and others if it were that easy. So that's long-winded, kind of broad answer to motivation.
It's good. No, it's brilliant. And I'm guessing that if you were my therapist and we were having a conversation about motivation, you'd ask me brilliant questions to get myself there. For the people that aren't using a therapist for whatever reason there may be, what questions, if they're listening to this now, what questions can they ask themselves to test that motivation and to get to maybe the crux of what they need to unpack?
Well, there's some theories out there where it's like people who want to push themselves, it's kind of like one of those, you know, I don't know what you call them in math, you know, here's the thing and it goes up, you know, there's like axis A and axis B, and then there's like all that stuff that goes. So it's like what's your support? You know, we need to understand who's there to support you, because if we're all alone, we don't really do motivation that well. We need to have supports in place. And then we're also looking at like how hard is what you're trying to change, right? Like how difficult is this going to be? What's the behavior that we need to change? And if we push ourselves too much into a hard behavior, we're just going to kind of like go off the deep end of it. And if we don't have support to help us to get there, it doesn't have to be a therapist, but a friend, a family member, a teacher, you know, peers, whatever. We need to know that like we have that cheerleading team behind us. And so it helps us to kind of keep going. It's like when you see people in marathons and they're like ready to crap out, you know, at like 13 miles and people are cheering. Like that's why there's so many people cheering and they see their family and friends, and it literally gives you a boost of that adrenaline and motivation to keep going. So we have to think of it like that. And so one of the things I ask initially in initial intakes too is like, who do you have that supports you? Who's behind you? Who's cheering you on to do what you want to do? So that's probably a really big thing for people to know. It's like if you don't have too many good support systems in place, we might not want to push you too hard because it's going to feel pretty bad to do things alone. Another thing I ask is like, what would success look like? So what would a healthy motivation look like behaviorally for you, emotionally? cognitively, like spiritually, financially, whatever it is, what is that end result you're trying for? And trying to understand what's realistic, really taking like bite-sized pieces so we can chew them and not get stuck, not have a choking problem. You can't bite off more than you can chew. And I think people get super excited and at the same time a little bit scared about change. So the third thing is what's keeping you stuck? You know, like good things are still very scary. You know, people getting married, they get super stressed out. Having a baby, a wonderful thing, they're completely stressed out. So things that are good and positive change can still really kind of take us aback and stress us out. We don't like change. We like things to be consistent. We like things to be things that we're prepared for. We like to know what's happening next. So even good change is hard. So sometimes it's just, I'm comfortable in the uncomfortable. You know, that's what I've gotten to know. So we kind of go through all of those different questions to understand, well, how do we help you have that intrinsic motivation and what external motivations will be helpful to?
We could probably go on a lot of different tangents there, but I'm conscious of time. So there's something that I've been really interested to find out from. So I've never had an answer to this, but having children, what I've noticed is the stories that the children tell themselves about the way they are in their lives is very different than the stories that people in our team or clients or even ourselves. So my children will say that they're going to be professional football players or they're going to be millionaires when they're older, and they really say things that they really believe. But it feels like past a certain age, the stories that we start to tell ourselves are more about what we can't do. Oh, I could never do that. I'm not the sort of person who could do that. That wouldn't work for me. I'd love to do that, but. So what's the role of the stories that we're telling ourselves on our physiology and our reality? Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting point. I guess if we look at like brain development too, if we start there, when we're young, our brain kind of develops from the back and it kind of goes to the front. I guess that's an easy way to put it. This back here, the cerebellum, you know, all the movement and the oral skills and the eating and the sucking of the thumb and the passies, and that's where comfort is, right? Movement, bouncing, those kinds of things. And then, you know, you get a little bit older and you're like, why are they scared of the dark? Why are they afraid of mommy walking out of the room? Like their fear response, their amygdala, that fight or flight system is really strong, right? And like, then what's the last thing developed is that like, you know, frontal lobe and like future planning and, you know, what are my consequences? You'll know this with teenagers. You're like, why are you doing that again? Like, oh my gosh, you could go to jail. You could die. Like, what are you doing? And they're like, it's fun. So it's like, they don't see, you know, what's ahead. As adults, we know what's ahead. We know how failure happens because we've experienced it over and over and over. We know that the world is a scary place. We know all these negative things. So then what happens is we're not getting like a ton of positive reinforcement all day long. Wear your seatbelt. Don't smoke. You know, don't fly, don't kiss someone, you know, that has the flu, like over and over. Oh, look at all the bad things on social media. That's a whole other, you should interview somebody. That's a whole other thing with psychology. Like I tell you, we're not prepared as human beings for the rush of information that's negative coming to us. So we have a disadvantage, right? Kids, they're not maybe watching, you know, TV and the news. They're not hearing these things as much. They're like playing on the floor and they go to school and they're running around. And so it's like, things are possible. Things are fun and new and fresh. So it's like the world kind of just brings us down a notch every year we get older. So it's like that innocence and the brain development and understanding forward thinking kind of sucks, you know, to be honest. That's why it's like great to be a kid and it's hard to be an adult. So I don't even remember what the original question was.
No, that was a great.
I'm like, I know it's something into doing.
That was a great answer. I suppose it feeds nicely into, from your experience, have you had clients who were telling themselves a story about themselves that was feeding into a limiting belief, and you found a way to help them overcome that and tell themselves a different story that helped them?
Yeah, so for me, I was trained in accelerated resolution therapy. It's called ART, ART for short. It's kind of in the same category as EMDR. If you've heard of that type of treatment, eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing, there's these trauma treatments that are evidence-based that were developed, with, veterans years ago. They're coming back with a lot of trauma and just, they're activated in their systems of fear and fight and flight response. And so when we're telling ourselves these stories, they come from somewhere. When you cried, did your parent or guardian come nurture you, right? Or was it stop crying, get up and brush it off? And where did the emotions go? Are they, like joyful in the family? Are they talked about in the family? Are they pushed down? What is being said to you as a kid? And these things go in and they're stored in your memory and unconscious for most of them. And so with ART or EMDR, these types of eye movements, it's not a talking therapy, like we're used to, maybe more traditionally. It's like your eyes are moving back and forth, kind of like REM sleep in a way. It's when we process, all your memories and things you learn in the day. Your eyes go back and forth, and we're taking you through kind of a structured series of things. And we're getting at scenes and your visual memories, like you're watching a movie of your life. And we're going to erase and replace these memories so you can kind of work through them. It's not like, Jim Carrey's Sunshine, Eternal Spotless Mind movie or whatever that was years ago. It's not like, oh, we're literally erasing your memory and you have no memory. But even then, they still met, the whole thing. So it's like sometimes, memories are strong. But it's the truth, the actual situation that happened, but you are processing through it because it's stuck. So if you have these negative beliefs, it might not be as easy as let's just rework the cognitive processes and do your thoughts, feelings, behaviors, your thought record. I do a lot of that. But if that's not moving the needle, we got to go backwards. We got to go deeper into that part of your brain and literally go, what are these memories that are staying there and keeping these thoughts and these feelings as they are? It's not moving. It's not cognitive. It's in your body. It's, stuck. And so people that have experienced hurricanes or 9/11 or abuse, neglect, it's not that we forget what that situation was, but when we're thinking of that, it's almost like you're re-experiencing it over and over. And sometimes that happens visually, like you can see someone have a panic attack. And other times it just comes up in your negative beliefs and you're like, I don't know why I think that way. I just do. Well, there's a reason. It's that biopsychosocial model. And so if we can get at some of these stuck traumas and pair it with, in my opinion, that's how I learn and treat people, is more of a CBT model. There's plenty of other, some people do family systems, internal family systems, and polyvagal theory and, psychodynamic. There's a whole bunch of theories, but getting at some of the root of it and then kind of gaining that insight and then moving forward of like, now that that is released and relief, now we can maybe work on it. Sometimes you need medication to join you if people believe in that, and want to use that, or natural remedies, whatever that is, for them, to be able to kind of help that system and kind of like that holistic model moving forward. So the stories come from so much of what has happened, and that's how I would work with somebody to reframe, reshape, erase, replace, and that kind of stuff. It's pretty powerful. It's amazing what you do see. People are like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that that's what this is about, when they kind of get to it and they're just like, oh wow, I had no idea. It's like you do know it's in there. It's just a little more hidden. It's a little more unconscious. So we need to bring it forward.
I think it's brilliant, and obviously, if somebody was struggling, say somebody came to you with limited beliefs around confidence and, oh, I could never be that person, I could never get up on stage, I could never talk, whatever it is around confidence. If you had limited time and you couldn't spend time with them, what are the few steps that they could proactively take forward themselves to move in the right direction? What can they do proactively?
Well, I think something that's like a small thing that people listening could do today. And I do this a lot with my kids, but even I do this with adults, and a lot of them say they've never even done it before, is we'll do a couple of like written things. One is just tell me, write a list of what you like or love about yourself. How many people have done that? You know, oh, I could never do that. Or, oh, I get one thing. I like my eyes. I'm like, okay, like, let's keep going. So by the time we're done with that session, I want an entire piece of paper with what you like or love. And if we need to, what do other people like or love about you? Because if it's coming up, I'm sure they agree in some way with it, right? So it's like, if we have to go to that, but I like it to be internal versus what does someone else like. I like it to be, what do I like? And then a lot of times I will do values, morals and values worksheet, because sometimes we are acting one way, but our morals and values are like kind of about another thing. So it's like, what's really yours and what's with, I'm trying to please my parent or please my spouse, and it's not really what I want. It's not really my moral or value. So I'll do some of those things. Morals and values worksheets are really great. And you can Google that to your heart's desire, and you'll come up with lots of worksheets with tons and tons of like adjectives and, you know, things of like, you know, nouns or whatever, of like what you like and who you are and those kinds of things. And it just helps to kind of really tease out what's important to you and who are you. Because if we don't know that, then we don't know what we like about ourselves. And when we like stuff about ourselves, it can bring out that confidence of like, I know I can do this because I know I like that. I know I'm good at this. And so there's a little bit of pre-work that we do.
That was brilliant. And we're big fans of evidence when it comes to these different things. So where have you got evidence? If we're talking about morals and values, let's bring some things from the past. So one of the other big things that we seem to face on a daily, if not hourly, basis when it comes to selling is cognitive biases. So these obviously affect decision making in different ways. I remember putting into ChatGPT a while ago, give me a list of different biases, and I think ChatGPT just kept going. There's hundreds, if not thousands. Yeah. There's loads and loads and loads of different things. There are some that are more popular when it comes to like negativity or confirmation. So how does therapy address and mitigate these biases to make sure we're promoting healthier thinking patterns?
Well, I think that starts with a therapist versus the client, right? The therapist who's in the room is the leader in many ways. I know it's like a collaborative process, but there's still a hierarchy of authority and leadership, right? I went to school, I have these degrees, I did all this practice, I should know what I'm doing, right? Someone coming to you without that, just like if I were to go to you for sales, I'm like, I don't know. You're like, am I just supposed to take this product and throw it on Instagram and that's that? And you're like, oh my God, there's so much more you have to do before you even start the Instagram selling, right? So it's the same thing of like, you're the authority in this. I have to be the authority. So I would just remove the client from that for a second. Start with the salesperson, start with the therapist, start with who has the authority, because that's where you're going to have that kind of hierarchy and leadership. And then the other person will be able to kind of go with you there. So if you're understanding and open to how you grew up, what your culture is, race is, identity in so many ways, sexual identity, and all, you know, on and on and on, how you think about money, how you think about wealth, how you think about, you know, salespeople, how you think about therapists, how you think about clients, you know, you could go on and on, right? It's that kind of unconscious way in which you have beliefs about something, somebody, a group, a product, whatever it is. You know, you could probably go into a room and say, you know, what are your biases about therapists? Oh, they need therapy themselves, or, you know, they come from, you know, difficult backgrounds, or, you know, who knows what it is people might say, or reverse, right? People have got their own bias about so many things that we as therapists are supposed to be able to acknowledge what they are, be honest with ourselves about what they are, so that when we're in the therapy room with somebody, we're not necessarily like getting triggered or having that counter transference or, transference, you know, with the client and the therapist, right? We want that dynamic to be as healthy as possible. We're human beings. If somebody says they don't have bias about stuff, we all have bias. We all do. It's just natural. That's how it works. And knowing what some of your biases are, knowing how it comes out in the therapeutic process or in the sales process of, you know, anything. It could be, like you said, ChatGPT. It could be, you know, if it's a female salesperson and a male, you know, cisgender, right, client, like what's going to come out for both of them in that dynamic. And that goes back to their childhood too, of how they view different gender roles and things like that. So, I mean, there's so much that goes in. I would say start with a therapist, get your own therapy, as you had mentioned, for therapists. It's important that they know going into something. And then we can't know every single bias that we have. And sometimes we're going to get triggered and it's just going to come up and we're going to be like, why am I struggling here with this client or like a salesperson? Why am I struggling relating to this person? Why am I struggling trying to, you know, make movement in this therapeutic process? And sometimes we have to look at that. What is going on? Who is the client? What are your beliefs and biases about this person or this situation?
I'm loving these answers. They're getting me thinking in all sorts of different directions there. Every time we've had a therapist on, we've always asked them what their favorite question is in a therapy setting. The last one we had was why now? So if I was to ask you the same question around, let's say you want to ask a question that gets someone to really open up, they've got to think deeply, they've got to challenge themselves. What kind of question do you think is like, that's a great question. And not only is it a great question, but it would apply in getting to know someone in real life, going on a first date, talking to a potential new client. What's a really good first question that people should be asking each other?
So a first question I would ask in therapy to get them moving, or just for anybody to ask other people?
It could be in any scenario in life, but with what you know about asking people questions and getting them to open up, what's like a really good, I love asking people that question. It comes up more often than not.
That's a tough one. Okay, I'm going to come up with a couple. I do like the why now, because I do ask people, you know, if you're 33 and this is your first therapy session, what's bringing you in today? What are the triggers? What are the things that are happening? People usually have pressure in some way to do therapy. It's not like, oh, I just want to explore things, right? Usually not. It's something is happening, so I want to get at that. I like to try to find out about people's traumas. So I don't necessarily say, what are your traumas? But I will use like the ACEs questionnaire that kind of gets at more of like what's going on in your life. If you guys haven't heard of the ACEs questionnaire, ACE. And that was from research, I think, out in California a long time ago. And a lot of people will use that to try to help them understand what they're struggling with that's been chronic or lifelong, things they're struggling with as growing up. I personally like asking somebody, you know, what brings you joy? You know, what makes you happy? I don't love as much, because happy, what is happy, right? I don't know. I think joy is different than happy. I feel like sometimes there's a negative connotation with like happy, like I'm never happy, right? I'm depressed or I'm anxious, like nothing makes me happy. But when you say, what brings you joy? I feel like people can say, watching my kid play baseball, or, you know, gardening. There's just something different about that. And I do feel that people do get heavily focused on the negative. So finding out what are those little sprinkles of joy that are happening for them? How will you know if you're better? You're coming here for a reason. You want to go from point A to point B, whatever that is. So one of my favorite ones is, how are you going to know? How are we going to know that therapy's over? What is that going to look like? Or maybe it's not over. It's just going to pause. How do we know that we're there, whatever there is? So that's probably my three, like assess for the traumas, understand what does bring them joy, because we focus negatively a lot, especially in therapy. It's all about what makes us sad, mad, crying. You know, it's like really heavy stuff. And then whatever I just said.
That I thought
Whatever that third one was.
that third one was great. It's like that. How will you know if you're better? How will you know if it's working? That kind of
How will you
question.
know?
Yeah,
Thank you. Thank you. This is
that's
my
great.
thing.
Yeah, that
It's
three
my
great
3 hours
ones.
of sleep last night, though.
No,
If my brain doesn't work like it used to postpartum,
you're doing very well. You
we're on
wouldn't
a
know.
roll. It's
Yeah,
there. It's there.
exactly. I've written something down as a question that I was interested to know. So, in terms of you and your understanding of psychology and your psychology background, and then building a business which brings on lots of unique stresses, have you had to apply anything that you've learned on yourself?
All the time. And sometimes I'm successful and sometimes I fail completely. And it just motivates me and it makes me human. I'm pretty good at giving myself grace. I would love for people to have grace with themselves. I try to model that. I try to model what I want my clients to do. If I'm sick and I take off work, if you can do that, take off work. If I've got kids at home and they're running into a therapy session and there's no school, and I warned you this could happen. I'm a real person. I try not to hold myself in some unrealistic standard that, like, no human being, especially with telehealth and kids home in real life. And I think clients appreciate that of like seeing that you're a real human being. And I think for salespeople too, it's connecting. It's I can relate to this person. They are a real human. They might have more knowledge. It doesn't mean that it always works for us too. It's not like you've never like lost it on a kid or you know what I mean? Like you're human. It's how you recognize what you're doing, repair it if you need to in real time, being able to say, oh my gosh, I'm not sleeping and why am I booking myself so much? I need to take time for myself here. I need to go for a walk. Doing these things for myself are really important too. And hopefully that modeling shows up in my counseling with my clients, and they know that I'm going to have boundaries with them, with myself, with family, and to be able to say, what are my values and my priority? Yes, I need to have time in my business. We need to have income. I get joy through what I do. This is like, I'm very excited that I chose the right field years ago and that I can do this. And at the same time, I need to clean the house and I need to, take a nap and I need to go to the grocery store and I need to do things and do whatever I want to do, right? So there's these like little pockets that's like you put in your calendar and you have to make everything an appointment so that you do it. But some of the skills that I use for my clients, I use for myself. Sometimes they work on me, sometimes they work on others, and sometimes they don't, and vice versa. So we have to really find what works for ourselves as business owners to be able to balance it. And it's not always like this, like a 50-50. It's like this, and then it's like this, and you have to be okay with the constant unbalanced nature of entrepreneurship and balancing family, friends, job, all of it. Because people get into that perfectionism of they're doing it better than me. Why can't I do it like that? And the reality is, if you were to actually sit down with whoever you're looking at, you see the Instagram photo, you see that. You don't see that right beside the Instagram photo was a crying kid on the floor or a messy office or whatever it is. So I think just kind of being real and having grace for yourself, trying to do your best to adhere to all the things that we are trying to help others with and know that it's going to work sometimes and it's not going to work sometimes. And that's life. And that's okay. As long as you are finding joy in what you're doing and you're not having some of the anxieties or depression really start to impair your functioning and become more severe. And that's where you got to be mindful of like, this is now getting in the way and I need support for some of this stuff. Otherwise, then it's like, okay, this is just real life and this is how it goes, and to enjoy the ups and downs and to be kind to yourself about what doesn't work.
Beautifully put. Comparison is the thief of all joy, as we all know. There's some great stuff in there, and I think like the perfectionism is it's taking a step back, and me and Zach, as we've gone on this journey of entrepreneurship and management and running a business and family life and all those things, I think one of the things we've learned is just taking a step back and acknowledging that we are human beings and we have the same emotions as everybody else. For people that work in sales, one of the things they'll face on a daily basis is a lot of rejection. And we know that rejection can really sting, whether that's in a family setting, a friendship setting, when somebody gets a no on the phone, all of a sudden they're transported back to 14-year-old version of themselves being told that they're not pretty enough to go to the ball with somebody. In that moment there, if I'm leading someone and somebody says, I feel awful, I've just been rejected for the 10th time today, what can I do to get themselves out of that situation? Are there any quick fixes, magical things that they can be doing?
The best magical thing for human connection to help us out of whatever we're in that feels bad is validation. People try really hard to fix something. You know what? It is, I don't know if we can swear, but it is crappy. You know, it is crappy to get rejected and to have somebody say no. It does feel bad. Even if you had the quintessential perfect childhood and you have no traumas and like everything was wonderful, it still sucks. Somebody said no to you. You tried your best. And we do take it personally, right? We're like, oh, don't take that personally. Well, how can I not? They said yes to someone else and no to me. Like, so either they liked them better, or they had a better product, a better sales pitch, whatever it was. It wasn't you that won the bet, right? And so I think as a boss, as a colleague, to sit with them in that for a minute and say, you know what? It does sting. You know, I hear you. We need to do that more with our kids. We need to not rescue them as much. No, it doesn't hurt. It's because this, and this, right? Don't bring people out of their emotional experience so fast. It's uncomfortable, 100%. It's like awkward silence, you know? You're just sitting there and you're like, ooh, I don't know what to say. And they're not saying anything. And this, like, space is okay. Like, we don't need to fill it all the time. So being with somebody in their negative emotional experience is the best thing you can do to bring them out of it.
I think that's beautiful words and some very wise advice that sometimes, as we are all human beings, we can forget. I guess one of the things that me and Zach talk about is we find quotes. We call them like our Uno cards. So in the early mornings when I don't want to get out of bed and go to the gym because it's frosty now, it's September, I'll think of a Marcus Aurelius quote, or I'll think of something from Stoicism where I'll lay it down, I'll remember that, and that will kind of give me that short-term motivation. What are some of, if we were looking at your Uno card deck, what are some of the quotes that you carry forward and you play for friends, family, and patients and yourself through life?
Okay, so I got a good one for this. I didn't have to think as long. The other one was a little harder. It's a little shift, and it's saying, I get to. So think about that, right? I get to go to work. How lucky are you that you have a job that you love, that you get some money, buy some food, get some clothes? I get to go to school today. Not every kid around the globe gets to go to school. You're going to learn something. You're going to be with friends. You're going to, you know, pray to goodness, knock on wood, you're going to be safe, right? You're going to be comforted there, right? I get to go to the gym today. I get to see my mom today, even if she drives you crazy. Like, I get to whatever. I get to, you know, because you get another day. You're here. How do you want to find joy in that day? I guess that might be another one, is what are your gratitudes? I am grateful for. I say this to my clients all the time, of like, it doesn't have to be big things. I had a great Jolly Rancher the other day and it was spectacular. I am so grateful and I loved that I got to have that Jolly Rancher. It was just awesome. It's like rainbows in your mouth, right? It's great. It's little things. I saw, you know, a bird in the tree and I stood there for a minute and I was very mindful of that bird and it gave me joy. So very little things, You have to really work hard for our amygdala to not take over of the fear of what is bad and what's not good, because we're just looking out for danger. That's all it is. We don't want to fail. We don't want to get told no and rejected. We don't want to fall down physically. Like, we're just constantly looking for danger and potholes emotionally and physically. And it's going to take some work. So write on the mirror, I get to, and then just finish that today. Put it in your phone as an alert 2 times a day, random times. I get to, and it pops up, and you're like, oh yeah. Because we're not going to remember to do something or say something different without some sort of reminder. I mean, you'd have to be a really unique, unicorn that you're like, anything you absorb, you can integrate into your day. Like, we just aren't that. We're not that developed yet. Like, maybe in 200 years we'll be like that, like the Matrix, where you just input something and kung fu or something like that. Like, we're just not that way. So I get to my gratitudes. What am I grateful for? Those are very simple things to do, but they're not easy.
I think that's probably a good spot to wrap things up. Like I said, I think we could probably talk to you all day, but I think it's not about you have to, it's about you get to, is probably the ultimate actionable takeaway from this for me, definitely. That just change of perspective is everything. So this has been a great chat. I can't thank you enough for the time. If people listen to this and they think, I want to learn more, maybe work with you or just start that process. Where's the best place for them to start and how do they start?
Sure. So the easiest thing to do would be to go to our website. It's synergyetherapy.com. And we are in the United States providing counseling in probably 40 plus states. We're not in all of them yet. And we have therapists kind of all over with different expertise, from kids to teens, couples, families, individuals. Working with me, I have a limited counseling availability. I still do see clients as I run the business. I also work with therapists who want to expand their private practice and grow it into a group practice online or in person and hybrid online. It's kind of my specialty area, since I've been doing online therapy since 2011, before it was even maybe 2012. I expanded into a group in about 2016 or 2017. So I have Facebook groups people can join as therapists. I have one that is kind of my professional baby. It's How to Build an Online Therapy Group Practice. That's the name. Google it. And I have courses, and I work with therapists all the time, helping them to grow their practice. I wrote a children's book recently. I don't know where it's called. It's over there. It's, Bella's Bubble Adventures. It's What's Your Superpower? It is, I can send you the link on Amazon or whatever, but it was a grief process for me. My brother-in-law passed away from cancer. He was very young. We were all very close to him. So I wrote it about my son and Uncle Brad. And it's about children and emotion regulation using deep breathing with bubbles. So we can certainly let people know about that book that's out there for their kids and families. And I have a nonprofit, just because life, is what I do, like squirrel, and I do lots of things. A nonprofit here in Minnesota called Shout Out Loud, and it is for suicide prevention and awareness. And we have an event every year. We raise money. We have a showcase of all the resources in the area, and we're actually teaching coping skills. So each booth, like if it's a business or a clinic, they're actually imparting coping skills with the activity they're doing for kids and families. It's free. It's outside. It's coming up in like a week, which is crazy. But so those are all like the smatterings of things I do. In case you want to reach out to me directly, it's just Dr. Lisa, DrLisa, at synergyetherapy.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. You might be the busiest person we ever met after all that. So I thought we were
Yeah.
busy.
People do
But
say that, like, how do you do this? I say, well, you should see my house. It's a mess.
wonderful. Well, thank you so much for the time. And we will we'll let people know where to find all those good bits as well. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun. I love what you guys are doing and bringing in therapy and mental health into sales. I love that. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank
Thank
you,
you.
Lisa.